This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. And he put the pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 103 of the Handgun World Show, and I just want to let you know, this is a practical show. I don't get real technical because I don't know a lot of technical stuff about guns, okay? I'm just an everyday guy. I'm just a salesman with a gun. And I travel around Texas and Oklahoma selling electronic security products to commercial businesses, and I just like to shoot as a hobby. So I talk about this from a practical standpoint. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. I'm not a firearms trainer or a gunsmith. Just take it for what it is. Just a guy talking about guns. All right, so with that in mind, let me knock out a couple of announcements, and then I got a great interview coming up. I got Steve Zofi back on here, and we talk about a lot of cool things. You know, we talk about STI guns and what he shoots and why he shoots it. We talk about strong hand shooting only and weak hand shooting only and shooting from different positions again, and we tie it into self-defense. So I think you're going to like that. I think you're going to like the tie-in towards combat self-defense skills and applications. So stay tuned for that. Okay, as far as announcements, I like to talk about the website, handgunworld.com. I want to apologize to some of you. Lately, it's been pretty tough to download some of the shows. The downloads have probably been going pretty long, haven't they? I've learned a couple of things here about producing podcasts. I have shrunk the size of the files, basically, is what I want to say. I've made them quite a bit smaller. So that you should be able to download them much faster now because the file size is smaller. I'm also in the process of switching servers. So once I get that done, things will speed up. So be patient. If you're using iTunes or if you're just downloading it off the website, it might take a little bit longer than normal, but bear with me on that. If you're not a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, join the forum, please. I'm on there. You can ask a lot of questions, and there's a lot of very knowledgeable people on there. Don't forget about YouTube. I have a YouTube channel called Handgun World Show. I also have a Facebook page called Handgun World Show. And last but not least, Shooters Legion is another good networking site. Oh, one more thing. Somebody emailed me recently, and they asked me if I still had CDs or digital downloads left. Yes, I do. I'm only releasing a limited number. I don't want to release too many of them, and I'm probably going to run this through the end of January. So for the rest of this month, you're going to be able to get that, and then I'm going to shut it down and produce version number 2. So if you want to get my digital downloads, Steve and I talk a lot about practical shooting. I just give you some of my ideas on why I shoot and what I shoot, and then I also play some good audio clips. Everything you're going to hear on that digital download is not on any of the episodes on the Handgun World Show. So just click the Buy Now button at handgunworld.com, and it's only $15, and the proceeds help support my show. All right, that's it. I don't like to make this very commercial. So to introduce the main topic, I want to just say this. You know, recently I had a chance to have a little coffee with a listener while I was in Houston on some business. And we were chatting, and he was, you know, saying that he's going to try out some IDPA matches and so forth. And I think that's great. You see, that's one of the reasons why I do this. If I can motivate people to go do some more shooting and practice and training, you know, that's why I do this, just because I like to motivate people to do that. And I think one of these days, I know what's going to happen. One of these days, somebody's going to say to me, "Hey, Bob, you know what? Because you motivated me to go get some training, you know, I feel more comfortable about my self-defense. And, you know, God forbid if somebody ever has to use their gun, hopefully if they've got some training, they're going to be able to effectively defend themselves, and if I was the guy that motivated them to get training, then I'm going to feel good about that. So, the shooting sports is a great way to practice. Let me just say that the shooting sports, they're not combat training. I've said that many times. But it's a great way to go practice what you've already learned in a training class with a few limits. I mean, you can't break some of the safety rules. So Steve and I are going to talk about how to become just an overall better shooter, and we're going to tie it in to self-defense. So let me just play a quick little commercial here for the Gun Rights Radio Network, and not really a commercial, but basically some facts, some gun facts, info facts that you need to know about that are very pertinent to what goes on out there today. So after the little gun facts segment, then Steve will be on for the interview. Now, I'm not going to come back on after the interview is over. All right, so you're just going to hear the music to close out the show. That's the kind of format that I like to do or set up on this show when I do these interviews. Oh, and by the way, one more thing. I need to let you know something. When Steve and I were doing these interviews, we had some internet connection problems using Skype. So let me apologize up front. Some of the voice quality might be a little choppy. You may hear some choppiness and a couple of echoes here and there. It was simply because of the lousy internet connection we had using Skype. Also, I want to let you know that Steve and I actually had to do this three times because we started getting cut off a lot. And I had to kind of piece together three different segments to make this show. So next week, or maybe in about 4 days from now, I will post part two of this. You're going to hear part one right now. Part two is going to come up, will be posted probably 4 or 5 days from now. So with that said, here you go. I'm Bob Main. This is the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Don't go away.
A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds. Or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, for the main topic, guess who? Steve Zofie back on. This is the second week in a row now. You know, I'm taking advantage of his time. And actually, you know, you guys probably figured this out already, but these are actually recorded back-to-back. But I'm posting them during different times. So how you doing, Steve?
Very good, Bob. It's really 5 days later. Don't listen to what he told you guys. It's really 5 days later.
Even though really it's about 30 minutes later, it's 5 days. Later. It's weird. You know, it's weird trying to tell people that, hey, we're doing this later when really we're doing it about 30 minutes later.
Right.
But, hey, you know what? As busy as we are, you take the opportunities when they come.
That's true. But the good thing about during the off season, for me at least, is I've got more time to do this sort of stuff.
And, well, that's right. It's the off shooting season for you. That's
well, practically, right. But I went to the range yesterday and had a really great practice session. I actually I started out shooting 40 Smith & Wesson, which is my normal caliber on my STI, and I have a 22 conversion for my STI by Tactical Solutions, which runs great. I love that thing. Cool. And the thing that I'm finding in doing 22 practice, you know, the problem with competitive shooting is that, you know, part of live fire is recoil. The issue with 22 conversions is that you can't really train the recoil. So you want to do exercises that are not recoil dependent or take recoil out of the equation. So what I did is that for the first 300 rounds using 40 caliber, I was working on drawing to a target, firing two rounds, transitioning to another target, firing two rounds, and then transitioning, making wide transition to another target and firing two rounds. Then after I did about 300 rounds of that, I put on the 22 conversion. I set up two boxes, and I had three targets, the same three targets that I had before, at about 12 yards, two boxes separated by about 10 yards or so. And I'd fire one, two, three, or one round per target. So I'm not doing anything with basically, you know, double taps or anything that is really recoil dependent. I'm really looking at transitions and then running to the next box, bringing the gun up into a shooting position or the normal shooting position about one step before getting into the box. So I was ready to go when I got in the box and then firing three rounds again. And I worked on basically movement into and out of the boxes, and the movement out of the box, there's two types of movements out of a box, one which is called a easy break, and the other one's called a hard break. And this is kind of terms that Travis Tomasi has defined them. But an easy break is basically that the last shot fire on the target is an easy target to hit, as opposed to a hard break, which is the last shot fired on the target is a very difficult or accuracy intensive shot that you need to fire. Now, the thing with an easy break is that you can get yourself moving out of the box as you're firing that last shot or that last round. But a hard break is you've really got to stay in the box, fire that round, make sure it's a good, clean round, and then turn and move out quick into the next box. So the way you leave the box is really different between an easy break and a hard break. So I was really kind of working back and forth, going left to right, right to left, and stuff like that. And that's where the 22 conversion really shined, because I was able to, you know, I'm really now exercising not so much the shooting part, but the movement into and out of the box, and that's where the 22 really works well. So,
you know, I have shot those 22 conversions, but I've never spent a lot of time practicing with one, so I'm glad you brought that up. But your point is good. You don't get any recoil.
You don't get the recoil, which can be a good thing and a bad thing, because the thing is that if you're out there shooting like you normally shoot and you're not getting the recoil, then you're not really simulating what you're doing.
Right.
But if you take that into consideration and say, okay, I want to do everything that is not, you know, recoil dependent. So transitions, they're not recoil dependent. So you can work on transitions, or you can work on moving into shooting positions, or, you know, learning how to use or shooting around a barricade, which we're going to talk about today. Or, you know, going into a, you know, prone or kneeling position, which we'll also talk about. Basically, everything that is, you know, into or out of a position or one shot dependent or something like that, like a plate rack. I mean, a plate rack is a good example there of a place to use a 22 conversion. But the thing I love about a 22 conversion is I can put the 22 conversion on my STI. I've got the same trigger. I've got the same grip. I've got the same everything. The weight is nearly the same because it's a steel conversion. So from my standpoint, what I'm feeling is nearly identical as if I'm shooting 40 caliber. The only difference is the recoil.
Oh, cool.
And the ammo costs about one-fifth the price of
Well, yeah. I mean, that nice low cost of ammo, that's pretty cool, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
You know, that. I mean, you got to say that's you know, the low cost of 22 ammo is definitely appealing.
Right, right. Definitely is. Yeah,
I didn't think about the fact that, you know, I mean, yeah, duh, 22s don't recoil, but it just never dawned on me that, hey, you know, if I were to train with something like that, what I'm going to miss out is learning how to manage the recoil.
Right, and the funny thing is that if you go from a 22 to full caliber ammunition, you swear to God that you're shooting a Magnum. I mean, I've done this before. I went from a 22 to 40. It's like, oh my God, did I overload these things or what?
Yeah, and
it's
just that 22 to 40, that's a big jump.
Dude. Yeah, and your mind is so used to, after shooting, you know, a few hundred rounds of 22, that you go to, I mean, even 9mm feels, but I mean, your mind is so used to that recoil that you go to something that's a, you know, a normal caliber or whatever, and it feels like you're shooting a hand cannon. So it's something to take into consideration.
So since we're talking about recoil, this is a good segue. The rest of Chapter 4, part of it talks about single-handed shooting, or also known as strong-hand, weak-hand shooting.
Strong-hand, weak-hand shooting, yeah. So no matter what you're going to run into at some point during a course of fire or during shooting either an IDPA or IFSC, is you're going to be shooting with one hand. And sometimes it's a requirement of stage where it will say, you know, engage, you know, these targets strong-hand only or weak-hand only. Or other times it's like you have to carry around a briefcase or a box, or you have something in your hand where the course of fire may not say that you have to fire strong hand, weak hand, but basically the requirement is that you have to lug something around, and it's going to pretty much dictate that you're firing strong hand, weak hand.
I've shot several of those in IDPA, too.
Right. Now, in terms of where you're dictated to shooting strong hand, weak hand, Brian talks about basically two kind of positions of, let's just say, strong hand. There's a traditional bullseye, quarter yourself off, lock your arm out, and get into your traditional bullseye shooting stance and fire the shot. And he says he likes to use that where there's a high amount of accuracy that is required.
Mm-hmm.
He says that for other shots where there's not a high amount of accuracy that's required, is he'll use the same stance that he normally would freestyle. In other words, that you're pretty much, squared off to the target as opposed to quartered away. And I'm going to say quartered away is your bullseye shooting position, squared off is your freestyle shooting position. And he would come up and shoot the easier shots using a more squared off freestyle approach, except he's shooting one hand. Now, in my case, I have rotator cuff damage in my right shoulder.
Oh, yeah, I got it in my left shoulder.
Okay, and I have a lot of pain in my right shoulder if I try to use a quartered off or typical bullseye shooting position. So I have found now that nearly for everything that I'm doing strong hand shooting, that I am pretty much squared off to the target because I just feel like I have less strain and less pain in my shoulder if I use that position. And that's the way I've kind of shot, not out of just from the standpoint that I think it's more accurate. It's my case because of the damage on my shoulder is out of necessity. If I try to go to a quartered off, I have pain in my shoulder and it hurts. At any rate, in terms of weak hand, you and I have kind of talked about weak hand shooting before, but the most critical thing in weak hand shooting is probably the transition. And that's where you have the biggest probably potential for a dropped gun of the transition from the strong hand to the weak hand. And I kind of use a wiping motion, which Brian talks about here. But basically, you bring the gun up, you draw it either from the holster or let's say you just got done shooting freestyle and you have two hands on the gun. And you literally just kind of like wipe the gun from your strong hand into your weak hand. So your weak hand just kind of starts wrapping around the gun. It's already wrapped around as it is, but it wraps around the gun as if you were in a freestyle position as you are kind of wiping your strong hand away from the gun. And there again, what I'll do is I'll usually use a pretty much squared off stance, maybe a quartering stance. I don't have any problems with my left shoulder, so I can quarter off if I need to. But I cant the gun to the right, and that does two things. It basically unlocks all the stress in your weak arm, and you can very easily see this by simply holding the gun vertical versus canting it probably about, say, 20 to 30 degrees inboard toward the center of your body. So it eliminates all the stress in your arm. And the other benefit of that is that since I'm right eye dominant and right-handed, by rotating the gun, it rotates the sights into my dominant eye, everything's perfectly lined up.
I've heard that before. In fact, it might have been you who told me that. So a real good point to cant it to the when I'm shooting weak-handed.
It does work very well. It's amazingly well because the gun stays right there and lined up with your if you're right, I think you're right eye dominant also.
I'm right dominant. A lot better control.
Yeah. Right. And for a left-handed shooter, it's the exact same thing. If you're left-handed, which means your right hand is now your weak hand, if you rotate it in, inboard or whatever, it lines it up with your left eye.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing there is that if you are cross-dominant, and then what it gets a little more funny because for your strong hand, you rotate. So a cross-dominant is going to be a right eye. Let's just use this for definition. You're going to be left eye dominant, but a right-handed shooter. Okay. So technically your right hand is your strong hand. If you rotate it in, it puts the gun in line with your left eye for your strong hand shooting. Whereas in what is technically your weak hand, which is now your left hand, it's going to be in line with your left eye and everything is as if you were shooting, as a, if you were a right eye, right-handed person, your dominant side. So at any rate, well, STI has, they're a small company, but they have great customer support. First off, I don't know if Chris is still, I can't remember what his last name is. I think it might be Shearer or something like that, but, they have great customer support. They literally have a lifetime warranty on their guns. I mean, they don't officially state that, but they do. If you ever have a problem or whatever, you know, they'll take care of you. They produce just phenomenal guns. They run very well. My gun has now had probably close to 20 to 30 rounds, 1,000 rounds through it. So it's very new. I mean, I should say,
20 to 30 thousand rounds.
1,000 rounds, yeah. I mean, but then on the other hand, somebody will look at that and go, "My God, that's the most amount of rounds I've fired in a lifetime or three lifetimes or whatever." So yeah. In terms of competition guns, 20 to 30 thousand rounds is nothing. I mean, people have guns in competition that run 100,000 rounds before they even think about having it rebuilt. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I mean, for a lot of people, you know, you go out and shoot maybe 100 rounds a month, and that's a good time, and that's, you know, 1,000 to 1,200 rounds a year. And, I mean, in the 3 or 4 years, I put on 20 years worth of, for your average shooter, the amount of rounds through my gun. So, at any rate, it's still very tight. I have no problems with the thing whatsoever. I will honestly say that I did recently replace the trigger group, because not only does my gun have probably 20 or 30,000 live fire rounds to it, but I probably got about 100 to 120,000 drops of the hammer through dry fire practice. And then I've also done a few trigger polish jobs to it and whatnot. That's one of my things I would do, is at the end of every shooting season, I thought, well, I should get out the polishing stones and just, you know, touch up everything. And after, you know, doing that for 2 or 3 years, it, you just wear things down. I mean, that's part of the deal.
So well, at any rate, I had to recently replace it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I really like that gun. I can't say enough about that. So
yeah, it's a good testimony to STI guns. Thanks for throwing that in there.
The two that you're typically going to see in USPSA are STI and SVI. Mm-hmm. This is where things get really confusing. STI was Strayer Tripp International. Now, Tripp is the same Virgil Tripp. A lot of people right. know who Virgil Tripp is. In fact, I had my gun hard chrome by my STI hard chrome by Virgil literally about 2 or 3 weeks before he quit hard chroming guns. So I may have.
I was
going to
say
last.
Virgil Tripp. Yeah, Virgil Tripp doesn't hard chrome anymore. Unfortunately, that's too
not
bad.
Anymore. Yep, yeah. Not anymore, and he does. I've had quite a few guns hard chrome by him, and my STI is probably one of the very last ones, if not the last one. But at any rate, so STI was Strayer Tripp International, and then SVI, this is where it gets weird, STI, I think it's Strayer Voigt, same Strayer, but Voigt right. as in Mike Voigt, as in USPSA Mike Voigt. The guns are nearly identical. They use the same grip frame thing. They had the same patent. They had an agreement basically between the companies to share the patents and whatnot. So the two guns are basically very similar. From what I understand, SVI builds a little bit tighter, more customized gun than STIs. Mm-hmm. STIs, I think, take more of the production approach, where SVI takes more of the, you know, hand-fitted, custom-built gun approach. But then there's a difference in price of, you know, roughly 50 to 75% between the two, with the SVIs being more expensive. So
sure.
At any rate, for what you get, I really think the STIs are definitely the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, the STIs seem like they're very fine guns, and I don't think you can go wrong with that. So, yeah, thanks for putting that in there. Okay, let's get back on track.
okay, yeah, we've been off the like, there for a while.
Yeah, but it's because we're coming up against here probably a hard stop in about 10 minutes. So let's spend the next 10 minutes. Let's see. We talked a little bit about one-handed shooting and shooting from different positions.
So real quick here, to give me 10 minutes, I'll hit these real quick. But there's okay. talks next about barricade shooting. Barricade shooting, he basically, point being, is that you don't want to put the gun against the barricade when you're shooting, unlike Bianchi, where you actually do bury the gun against the barricade. But the Yankee guns have these little wing things that are designed to be able to, where you can plant the gun against the barricade. Mm-hmm. But the one thing, the reason I talked here about barricade shooting, when you are shooting around a barricade, when you switch from one side to the other, and this is something that I've seen in new shooters so much, and I just want to mention it now, it is much faster and much safer that when you transition from one side to the other to pull the gun into your chest, go to the other side of the barricade and push it back out. You do not want to use what we call the Charlie's Angels sweep, where you pull the gun out and go all the way over the barricade, or you pull it down to your feet and go all the way around as you're crossing your feet up to the other side of the barricade. 2 points. One, it sounds like you've seen this before.
Yes, I have. I have seen this before, unfortunately.
It is pathetically slow, okay?
Yes.
And two, it is inherently unsafe because in IDPA and USPSA, IDPA you have your safe angles of pointing the gun or whatever they call it. And USPSA we have our 180. And the 180 doesn't just affect the sides, it affects up and down. It is possible to break the 180 going vertical or going pointing at the ground. So when you do the sweep over the top, a lot of people will sweep over the top, pointing the gun nearly straight up. And if you go a little bit too far, that's breaking the 180. Or as you sweep the gun over your toes, which again, second rule and the four rules of gun handling is never point the gun at anything you're not willing to destroy. And I'm not willing to destroy my feet. So
right.
I don't want to see that. But again, it is, I mean, if you just look at it from the standpoint of safety and speed, this is one of those things where doing it right achieves both points. It's much faster to pull the gun into your body, turn and poke it back out the other side. And it's also much safer to do it that way. So, not only on barricades, but this also applies to walls or anything where you have a shooting obstacle that you're trying to basically shoot around. You do not want to sweep over the top or sweep over the bottom when you're you know, moving around stuff like that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I've seen that, and it amazes me. Now, you know, I have to say I've never seen anybody break the 180 straight up and down. Woo, man, that's got to be scary.
I've seen it close. I've seen it very close where they've done it.
Oof, man. Okay.
I don't know if it's because they watch Charlie's Angels too much or what, but unfortunately, Hollywood, it is horrible in terms of gun handling.
Some of the gun handling in Hollywood, and it hasn't gotten any better. You know, I mean, we were watching a lot of movies over Christmas time, and just some of the gun handling is just ridiculous. I wish they wouldn't even put that stuff on TV, but that's Hollywood.
Well, the only thing I can say that I watched that was gun-related over Christmas is A Christmas Story. So I want a Red Ryder carbine lever action BB gun with a compass in the stock.
Somebody played that recording on a podcast recently. I don't know who it was. But, that's right. Yeah, I did that.
that would be you. I am a huge Gene Shepard fan, and I'm not going to go into the details of that, but Gene Shepard is the guy who wrote that movie, is the one who also narrates it, was just a character back in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s on WOR radio in New York. And I would recommend anybody, if they really want some serious entertainment with a twist, is to look up Gene Shepard and listen to a lot of his earlier radio programs, including the infamous Ludlow Kissel and the Dago Bomb That Struck Back. That one is a riot. It was played around on the 4th of July, but yeah.
I'd never heard of that one. What is it? Say that again.
Oh, boy. Okay, so I'm going to say something here, and it's not a derogatory term, and he explains this during you know, the episode, but it was called Ludlow Kissel and the Dago Bomb That Struck Back.
Okay.
And Gene Shepard, his stories are basically where A Christmas Story comes from is a book that he wrote called In God We Trust and All Others Pay Cash. I have not read the book, but I've heard a lot of the stories out of it. The Ludlow Kissel is out of that book. So at any rate, not to vector things too much far here because I know we're time limited, but I would just say for your listeners to listen to or look up Gene Shepard. Because the man is like no other in terms of radio personality.
I'm going to look that up. You know, I'm going to spend some time probably tonight looking up Gene Shepard. That's thanks for the education. I didn't know about that. So getting back to shooting around barricades. Now, let me ask you this, because I've been practicing this a lot, and it's actually working out pretty well for me. Last summer when I took that close-range gunfighting course, the instructor there actually taught us something that it takes some practice. I wouldn't recommend it for new shooters, but I'm a righty. So what he taught us is from the right side of the barricade, shoot right-handed. From the left side of the barricade, shoot left-handed. And and transition that gun from right hand to left hand. And of course, if you start left, if you start lefty, then just reverse it. At first, I was pathetically slow. The first couple times I tried it, I didn't get a really good grip on the gun, so I limp wristed it and caused a malfunction. But the more I practice it, and it gives me a couple things. It gives me a chance to practice left-handed shooting, and by golly, he's right. If you practice that, you can go from one side of the barricade to the other pretty fast.
Pretty fast, yeah. It's, I mean, a lot of the type of shooting that we do in USPSA, typically we're going to see a barricade is in a classifier, and it's going to usually stay, you know, shoot, you know, whatever targets in the right hand, strong hand only, and then the next part will be shoot the other targets from the left hand, weak hand only, or something like that. So we get a lot of that strong hand, weak hand around barricades and stuff like that in USPSA classifiers. But yeah, the transition, we talked before about strong hand, weak hand, and doing the transition or doing the wipe technique. But it, after you do it quite a few times, it's just second nature. It's not something that you even think about doing. It's just very natural.
And another thing you can do, what I do is I shoot freestyle. I'm using two hands, but I'm using two hands, you know, right-handed, and then I'm using two hands left-handed. And it's just a simple transition. All it is transitioning your grip from, you know, just basically reverse your hands, and it, looks pretty good.
Right. Yeah, it's something that you just, again, like you pointed out before, but, you know, competition breeds just the, you know, repetition and experience of doing things, and you're going to learn new techniques of doing things in competition shooting, which is not to say that you wouldn't, and you pointed this out, that you wouldn't learn it also in training classes, but you can learn it in training classes and then apply it in competition shooting sports.
And that's exactly what I like to do. I like to learn things in defensive training classes, and then I like to go out to the IDPA matches and get strange looks from people because they say, well, that's too slow. Well, I know it's too slow, but I'm not doing it to be fast. I'm doing it to get practice with that is what I'm doing.
Reinforcing,
basically. Yeah. And, you know, I've gotten procedurals for doing, you know, Mozambiques the wrong way, you know, when I got two targets next to each other. But I think it's faster to go two to the body, and then head, you know.
It is. because I would agree. Because the reason doing that is because your gun is staying at the same level. So it's like, you know, left, right, or either right, left, or left, right, whatever your preference is. But the gun is at this height, and then it comes up to this new height, and then you go again across as opposed to going down, up. So, yeah.
But I got called.
Yeah, I had the same.
Done it.
Really? Yeah. Well, I do the same thing, like where we'll sometimes see paper targets with pepper poppers in between them, with the pepper poppers being lower. And what I find is faster for me is to go across at one level, and then drop down to the next level and go across, you know, again the same way. And I just think it's faster doing that than going up, down, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, up and down kind of slows me up, you know, slows me quite a bit. So anyway, I like to do unconventional things while staying safe at the same time.
But see, the other thing is that we're pointing out is that doing this in competition lets you learn what is, you know, faster for you. And for some people, maybe going up, down is faster. But the only way you find out is by doing it and learning for yourself, which is the faster way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So the next thing he talks here about is turn draw. And this is the traditional, I don't know how much you see this in IDPA, but the infamous facing up range. And a lot of times in our case, it's like wrists above shoulders.
Right.
And then you turn into the targets and engage them. And there's a couple different techniques of doing, and it's primarily all footwork is what it amounts to. But generally speaking, the one concept that always applies is you want to turn into the gun. And what I mean by that is that if the gun is on your right hip, you want to rotate clockwise, as in turning into the gun, as opposed to counterclockwise, which is where the gun goes basically around the far side or the long way around or whatever you want to call it, if you turn counterclockwise. The other point of that is that it's safer from the standpoint that if you're turning into the gun and you start drawing, by the time you get your hip around or whatever, the gun is probably going to be pointed, I'm going to say downrange or not breaking the 180. If you turn the other way, let's say you're going the long way around, and for a right-handed shooter, we're going to say counterclockwise, if you draw your gun out, you're going to be pointing it uprange. You're going to hear a lot of comments from people who are standing behind you watching.
Yeah, disqualified.
Followed by the RO or SO saying stop. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, or go home, too. Stop
yeah,
and go
right.
home.
Well, yeah, go home follows a stop. yeah.
Yeah, go
so
home.
Without getting into detail about what Brian discusses here in terms of footwork, that you can turn, you can turn on your heels, you can turn the balls of your feet, you can throw a foot back and turn and pivot and whatnot. The only thing I would recommend is for your listeners to go to a match, see what people do, or just practice it on their own and find out what technique works best for them. In reality, there's probably that not that much of a difference in terms of time of whether you're, you know, pivoting on your balls or your heels or whatever, to be honest. So,
yeah, I like to pivot on the balls of my feet. I've tried it both ways. I've tried the heels. I've tried the balls. And for me, it just seems like pivoting on the front of my feet seems to go faster for me.
I'll tell you that I used to pivot on my balls, but I've since in the last year or two started pivoting on my heel.
So, really?
Yeah. Then I find is the most critical thing, the difference between all these things, is stopping to pivot once you started it and not, so you're not twisted up. And I found that just if I pivot on my heel, that, I feel like I have a more secure or more planted stop and I'm not off balance.
Yeah. See, I was off balance, and it scared me being off balance, especially with a loaded gun in my hand. So I figured I'm gonna do it the safe way.
Right. And again, that's what a lot of times it's just, you know, there's a safe way, and then there's a faster way, and it's best to start out doing the safe way, and then you know you can practice other ways or whatever, but don't decide to employ them until you've practiced them quite a few times. Don't call something with the range go. You know what? Now's the time I'm gonna switch and just try it for the first time while I've got a loaded gun and I'm standing here in the range.
No,
not a good thing.
Not a good thing. Lots of practice and lots of repetitions with an unloaded gun first.
Right. So the last thing he talks about here is running and gunning, which is just basically shooting and move or movement into and out of position. And this is kind of what I talked about earlier during the discussion today of when I was out the range yesterday as I was working on moving into and out of shooting boxes. One of the things that I probably see more often than not on shooters of even experienced shooters, myself included sometimes, moving into shooting positions is they come into the shooting position with the gun low as opposed to having the gun up ready into it to be fired once they get into position. So what they do is they run into the position, then bring the gun up and shoot. And what you want to do what you want to do is get the gun up into position about one step before you get into your final position so that the gun is ready to go when you get there. You don't want to bring it up too early because if you do, that slows your movement down. I mean, obviously, we can move faster with the gun held, you know, somewhat down low or close to the body. You know, again, this is, you know, localization or centralization of mass. So you can move faster with it close into you. But then you need to get the gun up into a shooting position at the right time when you get into the shooting position to get ready to shoot. So generally speaking, about one step away from wherever you're getting to is the ideal spot. Having it low up to the point to optimize speed and then speed moving and then getting up into position to optimize speed shooting once you get there.
I didn't know that.
But there are times where shooting the move is beneficial and there's times where it's not. And I can't really say there's no cookie cutter answer where you say, you know, whenever you see this, that's when you should shoot in the move. My guess or my general feel on that is that if the target is a somewhat wide open target and it's not accuracy intensive and you can afford maybe a C or down one hit or whatever on the target, and shooting it on the move, well, you know, is an option, then yes, that would be the time to go for it. But if it's a really accuracy-intensive shot, you're going to find out that if you're going to try to shoot at the move, you're bobbing along. You may actually end up missing where you should be hitting, or you're literally going to slow yourself down to the point. that you're not really moving as you're shooting, and it's a complete waste of time. And in that case, sometimes just standing there static and blasting the target is faster than trying to shoot.